This is the Dare to Dream Physician Travel Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Waylee Gray. Hey, you know how many physicians today are feeling overwhelmed and trapped, living that busy and unfulfilling life? Yet more than ever, we as physicians are keenly aware that life is precious and tomorrow is not guaranteed to anyone. My mission is to help physicians start living their best life now by discovering and achieving their wildest travel dreams. So come, join us on this journey. Welcome back, everyone, to the Dare to Dream Physician Travel Podcast. This week, we are continuing to share the interview that Dr. Tatiana Resnick did with me on her podcast, Voices of Women Physicians. If you haven't listened to the last episode, go ahead and listen to that one because we do a review of the three questions in life planning. As this is the beginning of the year, if you haven't already planned out your travel, it's a great time to plan out your travel for the entire year. In this episode, Dr. Tatiana interviews me where I share some tips about travel planning. I hope you enjoy it. Remember, especially if you're a woman physician, check out Dr. Tatiana Resnick's podcast, Voices of Women Physicians, on all podcast apps out there. All right, let's dive in.
Welcome, everyone, to Voices of Women Physicians podcast. Now we have a second episode with our amazing guest, Dr. Waylee Gray. And today we have a fun topic to discuss. We're going to talk about travel. Dr. Gray, welcome to this episode. Please tell us very briefly again about yourself, in case if our listeners of this episode didn't have the chance to hear previous one.
Yes. Well, thank you again for having me. This is so much fun. I love the energy. You radiate so much joy. I just love listening to your voice. But for those of you who didn't hear the last episode, by the way, you should go and listen. It's really good. But if you listen after this one, I'm Dr. Waylee Gray. I'm a sleep doctor who practices sleep medicine in a rural critical access hospital in Vermont. And I am also the founder of Dare to Dream Physician Travel Podcast, where we put out a weekly podcast to inspire doctors to live their life to the fullest through travel. And I am super excited to be here to talk about how do we incorporate travel in our life to make our life better.
Thank you so much. And I'm so impressed by what you told us in a previous episode about visiting 7 different places in 1 year, 4 of them international travel. And all of this is a busy physician mom with 5 people, family, including 3 children. And how did you make it happen? Tell us.
Yeah. So it's funny because what I encourage the listeners to do is not listen to this and think, oh, there's no way I can do this. Like, it's overwhelming to think traveling on 7 trips in about a year. When I started this, I did not plan to do this. I just did the next thing, right? So I was saying the last episode about a year ago, I felt that travel was going to be this new chapter in my life. And we didn't have passports at that time. And so I just did the next thing. I applied for passports. And then I picked the first trip that was outside of the continental US, but you didn't need a passport, which is the US Virgin Islands. So we started going on that trip. And through each experience, it built on one another. So after that trip, I booked the next trip. And after the next trip, and I might have booked the next 2 trips, actually. But basically, if you have an inkling like, hey, I really want to travel, maybe I want to see the world, but I don't know if I actually feel confident traveling to Africa on my own, you don't have to get overwhelmed by that thought. Just start with the next thing. Like, if Africa seems overwhelming to travel to, go somewhere outside of the continental US, maybe even just in the US, right? And then just go from there. So that would be my how. Is there was no way I would have believed if you told me back in October or November of 2022 that I was going to do what we did.
Let's talk about each part of this travel. How did you make it happen? First of all, time. How did you get so much free time?
Yes. So that's going to be a little bit different for each doctor, right? So for me, I think at that point, I had worked about 6 to 7 years in my attending job. I've been in the same job since I finished my training. And all the docs in my hospital get a fairly generous PTO allowance. The really interesting thing is, and I think it starts with our limiting beliefs, right? Most of the doctors at my hospital do not use anywhere near the amount of PTO that we were given. I think there's just something about, well, I can't leave my patient. vacations, or, oh, I mean to do it, but it's too late. I can't request next month for a week off because you didn't request it soon enough. And so what I would suggest for all doctors who are listening, whether you have 4 weeks of PTO or 8 weeks of PTO per year, is to really sit down, look at your calendar. And if you have kids or you have a spouse that have their own calendars, just get all the calendars on your computer screen and on your phone and just block those times, right? Put that request in. If you are a hospitalist or anesthesiologist or a shift worker, put the request in. If you don't put it in, someone else is going to get those dates, right? So just plan. So I think the first is just ask, make use of what you have. I think that is just key for everybody. So for me, I was one of those doctors. I never use all of my PTO. And a year plus ago, when I decided to embrace travel, I had a lot of extra PTO because they do let us roll over about half of what we don't use. So I had like a bonus travel time. So that helped. But that being said, it's case by case basis. And so that's one way. The other way that I made this work was some of the time when I travel, for example, I didn't even count this as one of the trips, but I live in Vermont and I have family in California and San Francisco. And it was really important for me for my kids to get to know that part of the family. And they really didn't have time to spend with that part of the family until I made this intention to travel. And so we spent 2 or 3 weeks at my aunt's house in San Francisco. So my kids were there. But during that time, I did telehealth clinics, right? I could bill for telehealth clinics as a sleep doctor. So it was a creative way for me to be in a different place, be in San Francisco. I mean, I was still able to see the Golden Gate Bridge and do these fun trips that I wouldn't be able to do in Vermont and escape some of the winter that's in Vermont in January and have connections with my family, but also not use up all my PTO time. So that's another way, is just being creative with how can I be away? And you have to draw boundaries on how to enjoy your time so that you're not just working and working all the time, but also not use up all my PTO time. So those are two things. Also, for those of you who maybe do shift work, or my clinic hours are part-time. If you ask my husband, I work way more than 40 hours a week, but with all the other things I do, like sleep studies and whatnot, but I have to be in the hospital about 3 days a week. So what I do is I'll look at the calendar and it's like, here's the 2 week pay period. Here's another 2 week pay period. And I try to schedule the trip so that the week before, the week after, if I just do an extra clinic, or for hospitals, if you do an extra shift, you're not using the whole entire time off. You can make up for it a little bit. Where there's a will, there's a way. So before we think about we can't, think of what do we want? And then how can we? And I think that's how I came up with all those different strategies.
Makes sense. Absolutely. And now let's talk about as important part, money, how to make it financially possible. Especially you mentioned that you're sole main provider for family, right? And work part. So how to make it happen? 5 people in the family in 7 international trips. What travel hacking tips would you recommend?
Absolutely. Like you mentioned, I am the sole income earner in my family. My husband is an engineer turned homeschooling stay-at-home dad, and my kids are homeschooled. So people may listen and they're like, well, that's how she makes it work. But I want you to think, what's my situation and how do I make the most out of the situation I have? If you are in a two income earner family, you have more income. So you might not have as much time, but you have money. So you can optimize it that way. In my case, I don't have to worry about my husband's work schedule. So we have more time, at least only one schedule to worry about. And then my kids have a little bit more flexibility because they have homeschooling online classes some of the time, but it's not as rigid as the school classes. So for us, it was just making that work. So we do try to travel in the shoulder seasons, and then I try to match the trip. So this past summer, my kids didn't have school at all. Even though they're homeschooled, they still have to do school, but they didn't have to do any school in the summer. And so we went on these trips where we have to take advantage of that free time. So we went to Taiwan, we spent about 2 weeks there. That's early in the summer. And then later in the summer, we spent 3 weeks in Australia. Those trips were like place to place to place. It was busy. It was action-packed. It was adventurous. And it took a lot of energy. There was no way they could have homeschooled their way through those trips. And we did that intentionally because they didn't have to be in school. And then in March, we went to Eleuthera, Bahamas, which is this beautiful off-the-beaten-path island in the Bahamas. And it's a small island. It's really chill and it's beautiful. There's snorkeling opportunities. The beaches were beautiful. And you really didn't have to plan all that much. There were caves to explore. It's so much nature. So what we did for that is my kids had spring break. So they had a week off where we didn't have to worry about school. But then the other week they had school and they just attended their online classes and we worked around the time around the classes. So that was another way. We stayed at a vacation rental and it was a very relaxing vacation where we didn't feel like we had to go from place to place to place. You couldn't. It took like 2 hours from one end of the island to drive to the other end and you didn't have to do the crazy, like go through the whole continent of Australia. So those are some some ways that we made it work time-wise. Financially, I will say when we first started, like the first out of the 7 trips, I honestly didn't even worry that much about the finances. There's seasons in life, and the season before our travel chapter, I didn't really have that many expensive hobbies. So we were able to have a cushion, invested most of that money. It's not like I had a huge amount of money in the bank, but when we started this new chapter in our life, the first trip, I really just wanted to go on a trip. I mean, I wasn't going to go into debt for it, but I also didn't worry too much about how much it cost because we didn't even go on any trips for about 2 years. And so that trip, US Virgin Islands, for those who haven't been there, is very expensive. The vacation rental costs, I think it was maybe $8,000 for us to stay there for 13 days, but it was a beautiful villa. It had a pool, it had 2 jacuzzis. You had this beautiful view of the Caribbean Sea, and my family of 5 was there. And during part of it, my mom joined us, who had recently become widowed. And so it was way more money than I ever spent on a vacation rental, but it was also what we needed at the time. So that was an example of we didn't worry too much about the money and it was an expensive trip. But for example, my most recent trip to Portugal, we stayed in the month of November. My family had rented for almost the entire month a villa with a pool in this island called Madeira in Portugal. So Madeira is an island, they call it the Pearl of the Atlantic. It's on the Atlantic Ocean. It's closer to North Africa than it is to Europe, but it is an autonomous region of Portugal. And for those of us who are maybe familiar with Portugal, one of the great things about Portugal is that the prices compared to the rest of Europe and certainly compared to the US is relatively inexpensive. So we rented this beautiful villa. I just found it on the internet and it was about $5,000 for the whole entire month. And so you think about that, you think about, okay, it was $8,000 for not even quite 2 weeks in the US Virgin Islands. And that doesn't count the food prices and the restaurant prices and all the other things in the US Virgin Islands versus this also beautiful island in Madeira, a little bit off the beaten path for the Americans. I mean, people in Portugal certainly know about it. And we were able to stay there for a month for less than the price, way less, 60% of the price than 2 weeks at another place. So we call it like geographic arbitrage, right? Just like you have geographic arbitrage in your regular life. So making the most of that. And honestly, travel hacking, actually, when we started the whole chapter in traveling in our life, that's when I started signing up for cards with points and all of that. And so when we first started, you don't have enough points to really use it. But then I try to book stuff early. So when I said I found this amazing villa and I was able to book it for the whole month of November, I was doing this at least 6 months in advance, right? Because when you get closer, things get booked up and things get a little bit more expensive. But I also booked our first round trip business class tickets to Portugal on points. We did it through Aeroplan. We flew TAP Portugal. And so that was such a fun experience. And that was on points. So it's funny because the flight probably didn't cost any more than it cost to go to the US Virgin Islands, even if you convert the point prices. So flights didn't cost more. And that's part of our strategy is we tend to like to go to off the beaten path places. So we don't tend to use points for hotels. We tend to just pay for our lodging, especially since most of the time for a bigger family, we do a vacation rental house. But we try to use the flights with points because you can fly to a place that's more inexpensive on points. And then when you get there, the lodging and the food is fairly inexpensive, cheaper than it is in the US.
Yes, points game, it's so interesting and so helpful. For our listeners, listen to episode 45 if you would like to learn more about points, where amazing Dr. Diavan Gimbal will share her journey and so many helpful tips. It was episode last spring, so episode 45. But let's go back to our travel hacks. So geographic arbitrage and points game, what else helped you?
Yeah, I think the timing. So using the timing of the traveling. So like I said, everyone has to look at their life and look at the schedules that they have to deal with and figure out what is the best way. So for example, I try to travel in the off season or in the shoulder. Shoulder seasons are the best because, and it's dependent on the location you want to go to. Like for example, Australia. So when we went to Australia, it was August, but it was their winter, right? And Australia is a very big continent. It's a very big country. So when we went to the north part of Australia, the part that's closer to the equator, that was actually their high season. So it was very clear the prices were way more expensive. But then when we went to the southern part of Australia, that was their winter and it was actually colder and the prices were way cheaper. So just an example of you can try to go to places that are shoulder seasons or low seasons because you have the advantage of flying. So even if it's like, hey, it's our high season because it's our kids' summer breaks, you can fly somewhere where in that country, that's not their summer, right? So it it's not their kid's summer break. So actually, it was a very laid back trip traveling through Australia because it wasn't their high season for most of it, except for this one part that we were in. So that's one hack. The other hack is if you're like, well, I only have time to travel in the holidays, right? Like my kids only have the Thanksgiving week off or the Christmas week off. Well, we spent Thanksgiving in Portugal, and especially in the part of Portugal that we were in, there are very few Americans. So they didn't know what Thanksgiving was. They did know what Black Friday was. I thought it was amazing. I was like, why is everyone advertising for Black Friday? But so they know Black Friday, but Thanksgiving is not a holiday for them. And because there weren't a lot of Americans traveling there, it wasn't really like high prices. So there are ways that you can, especially being strategic about where you're flying to, or just if you're able to take September to travel because you're not tied to the kids' schedules, then do that, because it is a much better month to travel to many parts of the world because the kids are in school.
Oh, yes. Anything else which can help to get financial part easier?
Yeah, I think the other thing that I try to do is I try to work directly with, so let's say in a lot of places, I just do it by myself. Like Australia, I planned that trip by myself. I booked all the stuff on my own and we rented a car and we did it on our own. But in countries, like for example, in March, we were going to the Galapagos and Ecuador, and that felt really overwhelming. There's the opportunity cost of doing all this research and your time too. So I just didn't have time to plan that trip. And plus sometimes working with a tour operator or working with a travel agent is even financially a better thing. However, when you choose who you work with, I think that is very important. So the tour operator that maybe your doctor friends recommended or that you found in some like fancy catalog may not be the best one. So what I try to do is I try to look for the local. And anytime you go through a third party, you want to ask yourself, is there a value add, right? If there's a value add, then by all means, go pick that, because realize that whenever there's a third party, you're paying for that third party as well. So for me, I try to look for the local, even on Viator, I'm like, oh, that looks like an interesting tour. What is that company locally? And then I try to just search for that on my own and then work directly with them if the deal is better. So because you're cutting out the things that may not be adding value, and there's something about being able to directly communicate with the person who's actually going to be helping you. So I think that's also a very important thing too.
Any particular websites or any other resources which you found helpful?
So it really depends on the location. And I think when I was saying if you get a random recommendation from a physician friend, that may not be the best one, but I'm happy to share the things that I've gone through, like on my podcast, or I have a Dare to Dream Physician Travel Facebook group too. So I'm happy to be a support as I'm gaining more experiences through my travels. So I try to ask people, do a lot of travel, who tend to work with the local networks. I do a lot of Google search. So if you go to a website and you're like, wow, this looks great, they're describing the Galapagos or they're describing this, then you go to that website and there's like 10 destinations. That's probably a sign that they're not local. They are contracting with a local company, but they are not local. Or if you go to the website and you search for the destination, I usually search for like the destination name and local travel agent or something, and you look at their website and they're focused in that area, then that's a better sign. And then you then try to look for reviews, or like you try to learn a little bit more about their reputation to see if they're a good fit to work with.
Local travel agent, yes, it's important. And what to do about the situation when a child doesn't want to travel? I would make it more appealing.
I love that question. It's so good. Yeah, I mean, this is funny because I loved travel before I became a mom and before I became a doctor. So in college, I did a lot of world travel. A lot of it was through Europe, like by myself. And it was this part of myself that I totally forgot until about a year ago. And I had this initial limiting belief. I was like, gosh, I would love to get into travel again, but the kids are getting in the way. Like literally, that's what I thought. I was like, the kids are getting in the way of my world travel dream. And then ask the version of me from a year plus ago, I would have been like, well, I guess I have to travel despite the kids. Like if I could choose, if someone could magically watch them and keep them happy for the time, then I could just fly away somewhere on my own and leave the kids there. Like that literally was the ideal situation in my mind. But after traveling with my kids for a year, I now wouldn't have it any other way. And so two of my kids were gung-ho about traveling. I explained to them what we were doing and they were like, let's do it. But I had one child who I think when we started this process was about 8 years old at the time, and he would not have it. I mean, literally when we announced our decision to go on the first trip to the US Virgin Islands, which is a little bit far away and out of our comfort zone at that time, he was crying. He did not want to go. And when we went, we flew from Vermont, and at the time it's cold, you had to wear socks, you had to wear jackets. And so he started wearing that. And then we got to the US Virgin Islands. It was 80 something degrees. It was was hot. He was sweating. He was still wearing his Vermont clothes and he refused to take it off because he's like, I am not here. Like, I am still in Vermont. Like, he just was. He did not want to travel at all. I mean, there was tears and kicking and maybe not screaming, but close to it. And so that was the kid like a year plus ago. And it's frustrating as a parent because you're like, oh, is he going to get in the way of me traveling? Is my kid going to get in the way of me living my best life? But we just tried to meet him where he was. So I was persistent, but at one point I convinced him to take off his socks. We brought his bathing suit. Somehow I caught him at a weak moment. I'm like, why don't you also put on your bathing suit? And then somehow he was in his bathing suit and we're at this beach where you could snorkel. My kids didn't even know how to swim when we first went to the Virgin Islands, but we had the life jacket and I knew how to swim. And we also got the snorkel and the mask for them beforehand. And so I'm like, this ocean is so amazing. There's so much cool fish in here. Why don't you just go in there? And he's like, no way. I'm not going in there. But eventually I kept asking him and I convinced him to go in the water. And that was it. He was in his life jacket and I held his hand and we snorkeled. And it took him a few tries to get the snorkeling thing to work. But we went through this amazing reef and we just saw all this colorful fish, all this underwater life. And he was hooked. So the next time he didn't have any trouble getting his bathing suit, I'm like, hey, do you want to go on another snorkel? Like, he was all in. And did he resist other things later? Yes. But this is now also the kid who's now giving me other travel ideas. When I do suggest a trip, my husband's usually the last one I try to pitch it to. I pitch it to my kids first. I'll be like, I think I want to go to Africa next June. And I'm showing them pictures and videos. And this same kid who was crying and kicking and screaming and not wanting to go to the Virgin Islands is now like, oh yeah, I'll go. So it's a growth process. I mean, every kid is going to be a little different, but I think to understand that it's a growing process for them too, and then constantly trying to expose them to be able to grow. You have to be persistent because if you just let them sit there, they will just sit there. But I just kept asking him and eventually it happened.
It is awesome. Anything else which can make travel with small kids easier?
I think it's lowering expectations. During the first Virgin Island trip, I had this thing. So we live in rural Vermont. It takes us at least 2 hours, sometimes three, depending on the airport we go to drive to the nearest airport. And then usually we like off the beaten path destinations. So you do a layover and you fly and you get to the destination. So in the Virgin Islands, we drove 2 hours to the airport. We did a layover and then eventually we got to St. Thomas, U.S. Virgin Islands. But we were on another island called St. John, which is kind of the wilder, more of the national park island. By the time we got there, we had to do a ferry once we got to the airport in U.S. Virgin Island. And then once we got on the ferry, we had to drive to the other side of the island. It was insane. When I feel overwhelmed or stressed, I try to use that as a learning pearl. So I'm like, next time I'm going to break that travel up. So now we just try to make it easier. We may just get a hotel at one of the connecting points or get a hotel to stay if we have to drive to the airport, get a hotel to stay at the airport. So we travel very slowly, just so that it's less overwhelming, especially the transition periods.
It's an important point, section makes it easier. Anything else?
I would say if you are a female doctor and you're listening to this, no matter what stage of life you are in, whether you're in the stage of life with those little kids and you feel overwhelmed with your life already, or your kids are out of the house, or you have this freedom to travel independently, whatever stage of life that you're in, just think or reflect, really look deep within. I think if for some reason my health didn't allow me, what would I miss? If I want to travel, where do I want to go? That's how I usually do my exercise in my brain is I'm like, if I don't have everything that I have right now, what would I regret, right? Like, what did I regret not doing? So if I take myself in the future and I'm like, oh, I have sciatica and I can't walk as well, or God forbid, someone's not as healthy anymore and now we can't go anywhere, what would I have told my old self that I really needed to do? And then go do that now because life is precious, life is uncertain, and make the most of what we have now. You are not going to regret it.
It is true. You live life to the fullest every moment. It's true. Wonderful. And if you would like to tell anything else and how our listeners can connect with you.
Yes, I love that Dr. Tatiana is putting out this podcast and creating this resource for women physicians to find their voice, to feel empowered. And because you are on a podcast platform, if you want to have inspiration to dare to dream, live your life to the fullest, use fun, adventure, and travel to help make your life magical, go and look for my podcast, Dare to Dream Physician Travel Podcast, and subscribe. I love for you to listen and connect with me. I'm on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn. I also have a Facebook group called Dare to Dream Physician Travel as well. I'd love to connect with you. Let me know what I can do to help you live your best life and just go book that trip and go. You're not going to regret it.
Thank you so much. Such a wonderful, such an inspiring journey. Thank you. And great, great tips.
Hey, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed that episode, please share it with a friend and go on your favorite podcast app to give us a 5-star rating and a review. It really helps us to get the word out there. Also, I am really excited to announce I've started an online Facebook community for physicians. Go and search for Dare to Dream Physician Travel. That's the name of the Facebook group. If you have trouble finding us, the link is also in the show notes. I hope to see you on the inside.